You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Hey, this is Andre Gower from the Monster Squad, and you are listening to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast.
What's your favorite scary movie?
What's the boogeyman?
You hang up on me again, I'll cut you like a fish, understand?
It's showtime.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sammy.
And today, we are talking about They Live, the John Carpenter They Live.
Mm-hmm.
When are we putting this out?
Now.
Yeah. So the next show we are actually going to be at is going to be Fanboy.
Coming up soon, like 2 weeks.
Yes. Coming up in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But also I want to say this podcast is sponsored by our subscription show, Bump in the Night Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
You have to subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com. But if you're into paranormal, true crimes,
spooky stories,
yep, you're going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Head over to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com
mm-hmm.
and subscribe now.
Yeah, check it out.
So what do we got for them today?
All right, you want to just dive in?
Yes.
All right, so They Live is an R-rated movie from 1988. So
1988.
A long time ago. I'm going to go with Nada. I'm not sure if that's how you say his name. Nada? Probably Nada. A down-on-his-luck construction worker discovers a pair of special sunglasses. Wearing them, he is able to see the world as it really is. People being bombarded by media and government messages like stay asleep, no imagination, submit to authority. Even scarier is that he's able to see that some usually normal work looking people are in fact ugly aliens in charge of the massive campaign to keep humans subdued.
Dun, dun, dun.
And that is from Melissa on IMDb. Thank you, Melissa, for your description. So we have some taglines. First one, I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
That is a great one.
Yeah, that's a good line. Obey or else. Alien invasion of the subliminal kind.
Okay.
Yeah. They control what you see. They decide what you hear. You think they're people just like you. You're wrong. Dead wrong.
Dum, dum, dum.
Mm-hmm. Who are they? What do they want? Yeah.
Good question.
You see them on the street, you watch them on TV, you might even vote for one this fall. You think they're people just like you. You're wrong. Dead wrong.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that one.
Yeah. So our director on this one was John Carpenter. Writers Ray Nelson, who wrote the short story 8 o'clock in the morning, and then John Carpenter wrote the screenplay that adapted that.
Okay.
But it looks like he maybe used a pen name, Frank Armitage, for his screenwriting credit. That's what it said on IMDb.
Okay.
So our cast, we have Roddy Piper as Nada, the main star. Keith David as a Frank Armitage. See, there's that name again. So I think that might be his pen name.
Okay.
I don't know. Meg Foster as Holly Thompson. Raymond St. Jacks as the street preacher, George Buckflower as the drifter, Peter Jason as Gilbert, Cy Richardson as the black revolutionary, Susan Blanchard as Ingenue, I think that's what it is, Norman Alden as the construction foreman, and Carrie Russell as the second unit guard. But really the main people are...
Roddy Piper.
And Frank. I mean, those are really the main. Yeah, Roddy and Keith David. So Box office. It's estimated that they had a $4 million budget for this one. Its opening weekend, it made $4.8 million.
Lisa made its budget back, right?
Yeah. It looks like overall its gross totaled at the end of its run was $13 million. And it looks like it was only in the U.S. and Canada. It doesn't look like it had a worldwide release from the numbers. So, They Live was theatrically released in North America on November 4, 1998, and it did debut at number one at the box office.
That's so good.
Yeah, and the film spent 2 weeks in the top 10.
I could actually see them remaking this movie.
I could see that, yeah. Somebody updating this, making it creepier. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
With all the new special effects and everything they do, I could see a remake coming of this.
Yeah, I could see that as well. So, it has a 7.2 out of 10 rating on IMDb, 80% rating on Rotten Tomatoes from the audience, and a 4.5 out of 5 on Google.
That's pretty good for Google and IMDb.
Yeah, so the ratings are not bad, which I would agree with. Our trivia. So, it was Roddy Piper himself who came up with that now famous one-liner about the bubble gum. According to director John Carpenter, Piper had previously written the line in his notebook of potential verbal bits during his wrestling career. And in case you didn't know,
Roddy Piper is a wrestler.
So he shared the notebook with Carpenter, and they agreed that this particular line fit the character in the film perfectly. And then Piper did go on to use it at a wrestling match as well.
We actually met Roddy Piper's daughter at River City Wrestling.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Him, her, and her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Oh, I think you met them. I don't think I met them.
No, you don't? Okay. I know I at least met them.
Yeah. I don't remember. So the big fight sequence that was designed, rehearsed, and choreographed in the backyard of John Carpenter's production office. And then the fight was only supposed to last 20 seconds, but Piper and David decided to fight it out for real, only faking the hits to the face and the groin. And they rehearsed for 3 weeks. Carpenter was so impressed that he kept this scene intact, which runs for 5 minutes and 20 seconds.
I was going to say that fight sequence was a big sequence and very, very long.
Yes.
That's like, man, how bad are they going to fight? How much longer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was a long sequence. In Search of Darkness, David recounted the event, smiling giddily as he said, "It was good fun. I never felt safer in any fight." As Piper, professional wrestler, coached David on how to sell the look of the punches and savage moves in an exaggerated form, making it appear more brutal than it was. Which I was thinking that too. Like, if you're going to have anybody train you on how to do a fight, it's probably a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
Roddy Piper's character actually never gives his name, nor is he referred to by name throughout the entire movie. He's simply listed as Nada in the credits, a reference to the character George Nada in Ray Faraday Nelson's short story, 8 o'clock in the Morning, which the film was adapted from. So
I was going to say, even at the unemployment office, they don't say, they're not like, "Oh, what's your name?" He doesn't give his name or anything like that.
Nope. The only way we see his name is in the credits. So, fun fact. And that role, speaking of which, was originally written for Kurt Russell. But John Carpenter felt he should cast somebody else after casting Russell in four of his films prior to this one. So those films include Elvis, Escape from New York, The Thing, and Big Trouble in Little China.
Which is, we actually have some merch. A Big Trouble in Little China.
Robbie loves that movie.
That's one of my favorite movies. We will definitely, I don't know if we've covered that, mm-hmm. but we will.
Mm-hmm.
But we have two.
Is that a horror movie?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It would be we have Big Trouble in Little China merch.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a fan of it as well as I am, head over to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.
There you go. And John Carpenter was impressed with Keith David's performance in The Thing and needed someone who wouldn't be a traditional sidekick but could hold his own. So he wrote the role of Frank specifically for David. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Because he liked his performance and obviously liked the actor so much. Originally, this movie was scheduled to come out on October 21st, 1988, but was moved to November 4th so it would avoid competition with Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
I think he could do that, right? Mm-hmm. I think John Carpenter can get away with that.
And of course, that's even more interesting since John Carpenter made the original Halloween. He is the man behind the
franchise.
Yes. He was a producer and co-writer of the first three films. But Halloween 4 was actually the first one where he did not have any involvement. And that's
right.
The reason they moved to this movie. So I thought that was interesting. And John Carpenter brought real homeless folks onto the production for several scenes and smaller characters. And he gave them food as well as paychecks.
So that's cool.
Yeah. And Roddy Piper said that he just thought that was a classy thing to do. So I thought that was interesting.
I know Robin Williams did that. Every time he did a movie, mm-hmm. he would say you would have to hire at least one homeless person
on set. Yeah, I think either you told me that or someone had told me that, but I didn't know that. All of the various aliens throughout the movie, both the male and females, were portrayed by a stunt coordinator named Jeff Imada. But the credits list a female ghoul as played by Michelle Costello. And obviously there are a few scenes with multiple ghouls on scene, so... Or on screen, so it makes sense. They probably have more than one person.
Right, right.
But Imada played the ghouls who had close-ups or speaking parts. So that was okay. Fun. So even the women, it was the dude.
Okay.
The aliens. After Nada and Frank teleport to the tunnels, two soldiers are at a checkpoint and hear about the assault on the rebel base. One is holding the PKE meter used by Egon in Ghostbusters.
That's what I said.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It can also be seen being used by the soldiers on two other occasions while Nada and Frank are being chased through the building. So that's always a fun little tie-in when you see a prop from someplace else.
There you go.
That is all my trivia for this movie.
So you're new to this. This is one of my actually... favorite movies, actually.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a fan of our conspiracy theory show, mm-hmm. Secrets Uncovered, The Truth Behind the Lies podcast, you should subscribe to Limitless Broadcasting because we talk about this topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this goes...
This is why you like it. I knew it.
This goes back to the thinking of aliens, mm-hmm. reptilians are taking over the world.
That I mean,
key figures are reptilians in the government.
Even if you don't go with just the alien thing, the idea that the government is controlling the narrative is
that
interesting
too.
Enough. But obviously, in this case, it's alien, so you can do your.
That's why when I was like, when I said, "Oh, we should do They Live," I was like, I figured there would be a little bit of a pushback from you, but I was like,
I didn't really know anything about this movie, to be fair.
That's cool, though.
I like legit. Just didn't really know.
Well,
I don't even think I knew anyone who starred in it. I had no idea.
Well, I thought John Carpenter would be great because we've covered several of his movies.
That was the only thing I knew is because you said it's a John Carpenter movie, and I was like, okay, sure. I don't know. I didn't know anything about this.
It's funny that Roddy Piper's character should have been Kurt Russell. He kind of looks similar
like
to Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell as well.
Yeah. To be honest, did we play the trailer? Yeah, you played the trailer, right? I think for me first. And I think at first I was like, oh, it's Kurt Russell. And then I was like, wait, no, that's not Kurt Russell. They look a lot alike. They had the same kind of vibe. I feel like the 80s vibe.
I think this was Roddy Piper's last movie.
I think this is maybe the only movie he did
or something like that.
Because he wasn't an actor.
You know?
But, I mean, I didn't watch this and think like, oh, this is a terrible actor. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing. I never once would have thought that he was, like, just a wrestler prior to this. Or, you know, that was his main thing, that he didn't act on the side like The Rock. Did both. I would have never guessed that. I think he did great in the role.
Did you think this movie in the beginning was slow?
I mean, it does have a build-up because you're just watching this, like, homeless dude.
Yeah, He's walking around,
and then he's got to go try and find a job. But, I mean, the whole point is that you kind of see that he's really observant. He's very much a people watcher, knows what's going on. And then, then we get to see the weird broadcast thing, which intrigues him. But most people just seem, annoyed by it. They think those people are just nut jobs who are doing the broadcast. And then he realizes, the church or whatever that's nearby would be the place, and he goes to check it out.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was a slow buildup, but I don't think it was bad to kind of set the scene. I mean, it's just very much like, you know, Michael Myers, right?
Yeah,
I kind of do a build up, set the scene, you know, see the girls all going to school, and then all of a sudden this like weirdo just starts showing up places. So
yeah. I think a lot of John Carpenter's movies are slow build up. Mm-hmm. I mean, Halloween is one of them. You have to build the story, build the scenario.
But once you get there, then you're like, what the fuck? So like for him and in this movie, They Live, when he's
at this newsstand.
Yeah. After he found the glasses.
Right.
And he's just walking around like, what the fuck? And it was well done because he did act like everyone else would. He took them off and he's like, you know, blinking a lot and rubbing his eyes like, there must be something wrong with me.
What
is this? And then when he sees the first alien, which, I mean,
wouldn't you freak out?
These aliens looked like rotting corpses, almost. I mean, they were very skeletal-like.
Right.
Very creepy. I liked this version of an alien because they didn't go for the
reptilian look.
Typical, you know, like corny kind of aliens. Yeah, or reptilians. I liked that these were kind of very spooky-looking creatures that would still freak you out.
And when he's at the newsstand and the guy goes up to him and he's like, what's your problem? Mm-hmm. And he's just looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I try to picture myself, like, what would I do in that scenario? Okay,
he'd probably be the same way. Like, oh my God.
What am I looking at? That's him processing it. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. What am I actually looking at?
Yeah. Like, what the hell?
And have they been around this whole time?
Mm-hmm.
And we just didn't know.
And the magazine thing was super interesting, too, because, you know, now he's flipping through this magazine that in his version, through the glasses, he can see it's just a bunch of propaganda built in there.
Right.
But then he takes them off and now it just looks like a normal, you know, it's got news stories in it, articles, whatever. So it's very interesting all the flip back and forth. So we have the billboards, the signs everywhere, and then we start having the people. It was really interesting. And then it's a mind fuck. So, I mean, he really, like, loses it.
So, when he's running away from the cops after the cops beat him,
mm-hmm.
he steals the guns, and then he walks into the first building, mm-hmm. which happens to be a bank.
Yes, with that big old rifle.
And he's just like, I'm here to chew bubble gum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Yeah.
That's when that is one of the most iconic lines ever in cinematic history.
Yeah, that should be a t-shirt.
And that goes back to Avengers Assemble
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. And then how everyone's just like, what the hell? And it's even better in that because then when he does start shooting, he's only obviously going to go after the alien people.
Right.
Who quickly realize what's happening.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're like, oh, they can see.
In the grocery store first, right? With that old lady.
Right.
Where he starts describing her to everybody around him. And then they all have their little walkie-talkies, I guess.
Right.
It's their special technology.
They're Dick Tracy.
Which John Carpenter was ahead of the game because you can really do that now with your watch.
Absolutely.
You call somebody or talk to someone, send them a message that way. You can't portal anywhere, but you can send messages. So he was ahead of the game. But I just loved it because, you know, again, I'd never seen this. So with that first old lady, you know, I kind of started noticing all the alien people looked like they had the same watch on. And I was like, that's interesting. And then when they all started doing this, I was like, okay.
Talking into it.
That's clearly their communication way. And then you hear her, we got to see her or whatever. I was just like, oh, shit.
They can see. Yeah.
He can see. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. That was interesting.
And then when he hijacks that girl's car, Holly's car. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I insist we go to your house. Mm-hmm. And then they fight, and she like kicks him out of a window.
Must have pushed him pretty good because he's a big dude.
A two-story window. I'm like, oh my God, he's dead.
Like, I know he was already kind of injured, but I mean, still, he was a big guy. She was not a big person. So she must have really just got the right moment.
Yeah.
To shove him out.
Yeah. And then the whole drone, like when they have the glasses on and they're sending out the drones. Mm-hmm. And those are just flying around being like, what's going on? You know, like they're trying to scope out the area. Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder if that technology really does exist.
I guess you can ask John Carpenter.
Maybe he knows something. They say they put the truth in the movies.
That's what I'm saying. You should ask John Carpenter.
So maybe he knows something that we don't know.
If he comes to a con that we go to, then there you go.
That there are actually drones out there monitoring us. You remember all that stuff, you know, in New Jersey with all the drones showing up. What are all these drones? You remember that?
Yes.
I mean, maybe it's the same kind of thing.
Maybe it is the aliens.
I didn't say it was the aliens.
Isn't the thing that octopi are like aliens. That's
yeah.
The thing, right? That are in the, they just live in the ocean, but that's why they're so smart.
Well, they can, have you ever actually seen an octopus? They can like crawl on the ground.
I've seen videos of octopus.
They can like, they can travel anywhere. Basically, they're super smart.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Yeah. People keep them as pets, and I understand, with them being so smart, I don't understand how they stay in the cage.
I think they stay just like a dog would stay, because you feed them, you take care of them. They don't really have a reason to leave.
Okay.
I think that's the reason. I mean, they're smart enough to know, well, where am I going to go?
Right.
And if I'm being taken care of, why not?
What did you think of Keith's character in this? He's been in a lot of things.
I mean, I like Keith David.
He was in Princess and the Frog. He was in several Disney movies. Mm-hmm. I figured that would be a big draw to you watching this movie.
I do like the actor. And I mean, his character made sense because you have to have somebody there. Someone has to join the main character, Nada, right? Someone has to accompany him and see the crazy.
Right.
But also, you can't have him just be like, yeah, I'll put on these wacky ass sunglasses that you're trying to force on me, and it's not a problem, even though I barely know you.
Right.
We're not friends. We haven't, you know, spent a lot of time together, and your crazy ass is just here yelling at me to put on some stupid plastic sunglasses. I mean, it made sense that he was basically just like, get the fuck out of here. Like, just leave me alone. You know, I'm not gonna do anything to you. You know, he didn't want to beef with him, but he also didn't want to be friends with Nada. He's just like, you just need to calm down.
No, I understand.
But he came around.
I think he held his own in it. I think they balanced each other out completely in the movie.
Yeah. And then once, you know, he finally, I guess, got the picture that Nada was like super serious.
Okay. He came around real quick. After he put him on, he was like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, then you know. And then they had to go find the group of people who all knew, and they had the contacts, right?
Yes.
So that you didn't need the sunglasses. I thought that made sense, too, because all those people didn't have sunglasses on when Nada had originally found them, right? So
right.
It makes sense they found some other way to
see. I was like, who is manufacturing these? Like, are they doing that underground?
I assume that's what it was, yeah.
If you're living in this world, no big company is going to do it, because that lets you see what's going on.
Yeah.
So they're manufacturing them themselves.
Yeah, it's like an underground movement, right?
Right.
That's why they were trying to get the message out on the TV and hide, basically. And it's, you know, the contacts were very smart, because then they couldn't really be picked out of a crowd.
Right, that is true.
Because they kind of would pick out, you know, you have the sunglasses on so you can see what's going on. But, and then what got me too was when they infiltrated the like underground layer of the aliens.
Okay.
When, you know, they did the portal thing.
Yeah.
The watch accidentally. And the fact that they found all these motherfuckers in that giant like ballroom, right?
Just hanging out.
And they just walked in there. And I'm like, no, you watch from the doorway. But
yeah.
They just walked in there like nobody's going to notice them, which no one did really acknowledge them at first.
Because I'm assuming the reason why is because they're like, no one would ever try to break in here. So
that probably is
if you're in here,
yeah,
you know the reason why you're in here. So the guy came up to you here and he was like, oh, glad you're in the inside, boys. And he was like, let me show you. Have you gotten a grand tour? Let me show you around.
It must have been an arrogance. You're right. Because that's pretty stupid, too, to just be like, would you like to see every secret down here?
Right.
Right.
And that's why he was like, you guys could have dressed up for the occasion. Mm-hmm. It's his arrogance. They were just like, no one on earth would ever try to break into our little clubhouse.
Well,
underground facility base, you know?
Didn't quite get that right.
And that makes you wonder, we clearly have underground bases, you know? I'm just saying in general.
Where's Josh at?
Clearly.
Should have had him on this episode.
We should have.
And then I could have just been like, call me back when you want to talk about the movie.
We are talking about the movie. Okay. But I'm just saying, clearly we have underground bases in real life.
Sure.
Okay, let's continue.
Oh my goodness. Oh boy. But, I mean, and the way they tried to finally just kind of take over things was pretty smart too, right at the end, right? When they were at the news station.
Yes. And they were trying to find Holly, and the Holly's little cross up when she traded on them, she was like in an infiltrator in their group, like to try to bring them down.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And Keith gets hit, mm-hmm. Frank in the movie,
mm-hmm.
And she's holding a gun on him, and they're on the roof, and they find the like. Teleporter or the source of their power or anything, right. And she's like, don't do it, don't do it, and he pulls out a gun and shoots her, and then
that was pretty satisfying.
And in this whole thing I was like, how is this gonna end? Like, what's the outcome gonna be?
Because what is our goal?
We're clearly not gonna make it through this because of so much stuff, like fighting all of that. And I was like, what is the main objective? And I guess by them getting sacrificed, he is freeing everybody else. Because once he broke the antenna, everybody could see now.
Yeah, now everyone can see all those alien motherfuckers. Yep.
Can you imagine watching TV and being like, oh, we're just watching regular newscasts, and then...
And the newscasters look like that.
Yeah, you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What am I watching?
That would certainly cause a stir.
And then you go into another channel, and everybody's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you really wonder what's going on in life. We do live in a strange world, though.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, did you like the movie? Would you rewatch it?
I did. I think this is a good spooky movie. It's not like a slasher movie. It's not Michael Myers' slasher movie, but it is still a good spooky movie. And I think they were very creepy, the alien folk.
What would you rate this?
I mean, I would give this a good, like, 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'd probably give it a 9 because I liked it. Mm-hmm. Even the slow parts are good.
Yeah.
Like, it builds the world. It makes you want to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I understand that you have to build what's going on and build the characters up and how it is.
Yeah. But, yeah, even though it does, like we said, takes a little bit to get off the ground, you got to kind of get into the mindset of this character and why he would discover it.
Right.
You know, because we don't want to just see him show up at the church and, you know, without really explanation. So,
right.
Yeah, you needed some time to see, well, why would he suddenly pick up on what's going on and why would he get involved?
Right. No, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. But, yeah, I liked it.
Would you rewatch it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even now, knowing everything that it's going
to
happen.
This movie has a cult following, though. That's why another reason why I wanted to cover this is because people usually don't cover this movie. Podcasts don't usually cover this movie.
Yeah.
And I wanted us to stand out a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good spooky movie, you know? It's not, like we said, it's not a slasher movie. It's a different kind of horror movie.
Yeah.
But it's good. And, you know, I always like the 80s movies.
The movies that make you think. You know,
makes you think in a different kind of way.
Because the way it ended, you're just like, oh my goodness, what's going on? I mean, could this really be happening?
Yeah.
And I like the way he ended it. Like, you know.
We don't know what happens next. But,
right.
It can't be good.
You have
that
to,
was for the alien people.
It's like those choose your own adventure books. Mm-hmm. That's what it made me think of.
Yeah. And I could see that. That kind of vibe. Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I would definitely rewatch it. I think it's a good movie. I would highly recommend it, especially this time of year. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, technically, like, we watch horror stuff all year, which a lot of people do. But, you know, this is a good, I feel like, early spooky season type movie.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we do have a shirt of this.
Do we?
And in the on the site.
Oh, really? So, I didn't even know we had a shirt. What's on it?
So it has the main monster and everything. I mean, it's cool. I'll show you. I'll put a picture of it online.
That shows I should spend more time on the website.
Maybe.
Clearly, because I don't even know all the shirts, I guess, that are on there.
This is one of the very first shirts I designed.
Oh, really?
And okay. I was like, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I've seen this movie several times, mm-hmm. and I like the overall premise of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just, now that we do this show, I'm just like, now I can get you into doing watching shows that you movies that you normally wouldn't watch.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw in They Live.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yeah, we do have merch of this. We do have Halloween stuff.
Of course, we got lots of Michael Myers.
Michael Myers, Buffy, mm-hmm. anything you want. So head mm-hmm. over to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com, subscribe to the network, mm-hmm. and buy some merch.
Yep. And if you'll be in Orlando, maybe we'll see you at Fanboy or Tampa Scaredice.
Yes, that's coming up as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bunch of Dexter stuff for that.
So excited.
Just unraveled that, revealed that last night on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're on our mailing list, you got a sneak peek of it before anybody else did.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
But yeah, if you're going to be heading to Scaredice and you want to pre-order a shirt, let us know.
Yeah.
He'll sell it to you at the same price you'd pay at the con. You can just pick it up at the booth. So you'll know you already have that merch ready to go. Or, you know, you can do your traditional shopping there. But if you're not going to Scaredice, you can still order it, but you'll just have to pay for shipping.
Absolutely. And we have up to a 4XL.
Yeah.
I've noticed I was leaving a bunch of money on the table because people would come up and be like, yeah, I'm a 4XL.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd only go up to a 3XL. So I was just like, no, we're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're probably one of the only booths that are going to have 4XL shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning into this episode.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And you guys know that everybody's entitled to one good scare.
Mm-hmm.
Stay spooky out there.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast is produced and hosted by Robbie and Sammy Brooksby as part of the Limitless Broadcasting Podcast Network. Post-production and intro by Sammy Brooksby. Follow the show on Instagram at BoogeymanPod. You can also follow the Limitless Broadcasting Company at Limitless Broadcasting and your horror hosts at Robert1950 Studios and at The Samalam. We also have a TikTok at 1950 Studios. Email your creepy comments and spooky suggestions to us at boogeymanpod@gmail.com. Don't forget, everyone is entitled to one good scare. Have a horrific week!